Good evening. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM. This is Lisa Gar, and it is so great to be with you tonight. I love being with you on the show. So tonight, we're going to be talking about, it's the John and John show. We've got John Robbins in the first hour and John Gray in the second hour. In the first hour, we're talking about making choices that can positively affect our food supply. We're really talking about a food revolution in this first hour, and we're talking about it with John Robbins. John Robbins contributed to make a huge global impact with his first book, A Diet for a New America. That book changed basically beef consumption in the United States, decreased it by 20%. That's how impactful that book was. And he is, the only son of the founder of the Baskin-Robbins ice cream empire, which he walked away from. He walked away from all of that and the footsteps he was groomed to follow in order to pursue what he thinks is the true American dream of health and longevity and taking back our health. And his latest book is called No Happy Cows. We're going to talk with John Robbins about that in just a moment. We'll be right back. This is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Gar, and John Robbins is my guest. He helped bring the natural foods industry to the mainstream, and he's gained many awards, such as the Green America's Lifetime Achievement Award, and he created Earth Day International. Welcome to the show, John Robbins. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm glad to be with you and all of our listeners.
Yes, and it's nice to talk with you again. So you have a new book out called No Happy Cows, and there's such great information in this book. Tell us why, first of all, you wrote about No Happy Cows.
Well, the beef industry likes to present the image that the livestock are well-treated now, but modern meat production is based on a system that treats animals like commodities and feeds them feedstuffs that are completely unnatural to their physiology. And the result is a lot of environmental destruction, a lot of cruelty to these animals, and increasing rates of heart disease in our people. And I think we are a lot better off eating a lot less of that kind of thing.
It's milk from happy cows and cheese from happy cows. Those types of commercials that we see are, as we know, many different things have lots of marketing behind them and lots of campaigns behind them. But you made a true dent with your book in the 80s, A Diet for New America, in the beef industry that tipped it on its heels. It did. And Oprah got involved.
Yes. And a lot of people today, you know, they're sick of being sick. And I think we need a food revolution.
Let's talk about that. Yes, I do too.
I do. You know, I'm glad. We have an industrial food system, and it's giving us a lot of processed, cheap food. Cheap in one sense, but expensive in another, because this so-called cheap food is making us fat, it's making us sick, and it's actually bankrupting us, because we're spending ever more money on, well, we call it healthcare, but really it's disease management.
I got to tell you a story. I just came back from visiting Croatia, and Croatia is a beautiful country because they live so close to the land there. Everything is grown outside of the restaurants and homes, and even the hotels grow, you know, have large gardens behind their hotels to grow the natural produce. Not a lot of supermarkets. I actually didn't see one there. I'm sure you have to look. But I was so impressed with how close to the land that the people ate. Even I have a wheat allergy here in the U.S. I could eat bread there because it's just three simple ingredients and it's baked right there and it's served right from the oven to the table, and the fruit is picked off of the trees, and it's just such a beautiful, it was beautiful for me. But then when we came back to the U.S., we the trains that you take from plane to plane when you come back in from customs and you have to get to your, you know, if you have a stopover to your next plane. And I looked at the train we were on, and it was in the U.S., and I saw people that were just laden with inflammation and toxicity and thinning hair and edema. And it almost, the first thing that came through my mind, John, was, they're killing us. And I don't know what that thought was, but it was almost as if this country, the U.S., has become so detached from that farm-to-table mentality with our packaged foods, with our giant supermarket chains, with the everything being in a container. And yes, I'm on a soapbox about this, John. I want you to teach us what it is. How long does it take for food to hit our supermarkets from a tree here in the U.S.?
A long time. The average calorie of food eaten in the United States travels over 2,000 miles before people eat it, during which time it deteriorates in nutritional value. It's processed in all kinds of ways. You know, the rates of diabetes in the United States are triple what they were 20 years ago. The rates of food allergies in the United States
yes.
are quadruple what they were 20 years ago. Something has happened in the last 20 years. And you know what has happened in the last 20 years? Is we've had the introduction of genetically modified foods into the food supply, and people don't realize it because there isn't labeling. And I think this is one of the entry points for the food revolution, is to get labeling of genetically engineered foods or genetically modified organisms, as they're also called, labeled GMOs. And this is an issue that I think is really important. And for one reason, because Monsanto basically wants to control the world's food supply, and this is a way we can start to stop them.
Well, I mean, that measure did not pass. I mean, there was not any... well, obviously, there was a lot of mudbreaking against it, so it didn't pass to be able to get those. Some companies took it upon themselves, of course, to label the fact that there are non-GMO items in this particular ingredient list or whatever it is. But
well, let me clarify that, actually.
Please do.
The labeling initiatives in California 2 years ago and then last year in Washington State did not pass. They were defeated narrowly by a tremendous amount of out-of-state money funneled through the Grocery Manufacturers Association, pummeling people in those states with lies and deceptions that Monsanto wanted people to believe that aren't true. Now, though, we've had some incredible victories. In May of this year, Vermont passed the first in the nation, no strings attached, GMO labeling bill. Then, later this last spring, two counties in Oregon State passed farmer-led bans on planting GMO crops, and now, right now, activists and parents and farmers have put ballot initiatives up for the popular vote in the November election of this year in Oregon and in
Colorado.
Colorado is fighting these bills, but we're going to get one of them passed, and it's going to send a real signal to the junk food companies that are supporting Monsanto's efforts and to Monsanto itself. That people are fed up with this opaqueness. We want to know what we're eating. People have a right to know what they're eating and how their food is produced.
If it was up to the people, we actually probably would have voted for the labeling and for us to be able to know what's genetically modified. But let's educate people right now. Most genetically modified crops, corn, soy.
We want to know. People do.
Yes.
And that's why these initiatives that are currently on the ballot in Oregon and in Colorado are so important that we get them passed.
Okay, good to know. All right, so let us actually, if we could explain to people, which are the most genetically modified crops in the U.S., at least?
Yes, those are corn. Now, that isn't sweet corn, like corn on the cob, but it's corn that is grown for ethanol, it's corn that is grown for livestock feed, and it's corn that is grown for high fructose corn syrup, and also soy. But again, this isn't soy that is grown for tofu or something like that, or soy milk. It's soy that is fed to livestock and is used in processed foods. When you eat processed foods, foods that come in packages with the long list and inevitably contain highly synthetic sweeteners, including high fructose corn syrup, you are eating GMOs. You're eating genetically modified organisms without knowing it. When you eat organic food, on the other hand, you are avoiding it. And that's just one of the many reasons why eating organic is a great idea.
Organic and close to the farm. So what is your opinion, though, about the supermarket and the chains and how food is shipped in and crates and packaged instead of back to the small market, back to the independent farm, back to the backyard gardening? Is there a conspiracy going on there?
Well, it whether or not there's a conspiracy, the effect is the same. It's a great way to destroy people's health. It's a great way to make people feel powerless and disconnected from their food source, from the earth, from their local communities. It's a great way to bankrupt people and make them get them into debt and feel enslaved in that way. So I don't know exactly if people sit around a smoke-filled room and decide to do this on purpose or if it just happens this way. But there are supermarkets profiting from it. There are junk food companies profiting from it, and they're happy with it. They're happy with the status quo, even though the status quo is making people so unhealthy, ruining so many people's lives, and harming all of us in so many ways.
Why the denial, though? Why the continuation of buying these types of foods when maybe the perspective isn't there? I mean, the knowledge is definitely there.
Well, they add, the junk food companies have a secret. They hire, and this is their term, craveability experts. These are people who are experts in making foods addictive, and they add a lot of sugar and sweeteners like sugar, high fructose corn syrup being the foremost among them, but there are others. They add a lot of salt. They add a lot of fats, trans fats, and other unhealthy fats, and they add chemicals that are designed to make us addicted to those foods. Processed foods are addictive. Highly sweetened foods are addictive, just as surely as tobacco is, and they are toxic to us just as surely as heart disease and all kinds of and diabetes and all kinds of very serious health problems, just like tobacco does. We are at the same state right now regarding processed foods and highly sweetened foods as we were with tobacco about 25 years ago. And soon it's going to be known widely that these foods are addictive and that they are really damaging our health in a massive way.
But at least there was a big campaign around smoking. There's not such a campaign around junk foods.
Not yet, but I like to think there will be. And one of the reasons that there isn't yet is because only a certain percentage. So people who didn't were outraged about what was happening. But everybody eats. And unfortunately in this country, just about every highly processed food that are high in sugar, salt, and fat.
Okay, let's talk. If we can, your phone's breaking up a little bit here. I can't quite hear you. What was that?
How's this?
There you go. Better. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Coca-Cola being more affordable than clean water in many places. John?
Yeah.
There you are. Okay. Did you hear my last question?
I did not.
Oh, okay. So why is Coca-Cola more affordable than clean water in most places?
Yeah, that's a great question. That is a terrific question. It has to do with their control over public policy. We have a boycott of Coca-Cola going right now. .com. And again, the website is cokeboycott.com. The reason we have this, we have about 400,000 signatures. The Coca-Cola has been funneling money illegally through a front group called the Grocery Manufacturers Association to block the initiative that would require the labeling of genetically modified foods. Been stealing water from local and selling them back to them as Coke. They are harming people in so many ways, and it's time we put a stop to that.
So basically what you're saying is that it is the incentives of these companies to get Coca-Cola into as many countries and places as possible to incentivize them to drink that instead of clean water. Is it the sugar?
Absolutely.
Is it the sugar? Is it the high fructose? I mean, I love the recent campaign that Coke is running saying it's real sugar as opposed to, what was it before?
Exactly. I mean, Coca-Cola, everybody knows, has got a brain that it's very, that's not good for you. But they pummel you with ads for it. They make it convenient. It's everywhere. And they make it more convenient than safe drinking water. And that's the crime. People should have access to inexpensive or free, safe, healthy drinking water. That should be a basic human right. And instead, Coca-Cola is going around taking the water supply and converting it to bottled water, Dasani they own, converting it to Coca-Cola, and selling it back to people. It's a crime.
What about vitamin water?
Well, vitamin water sounds like a healthy product.
I mean, uh-huh.
But it isn't. It's Coca-Cola owns that. Coca-Cola owns vitamin water. And really what it is water, sweetener, high fructose corn syrup, usually sometimes other sweeteners, and a few pennies worth of synthetic vitamins sprayed in there, and then artificial and natural flavors added. It's really another junk food disguised as a healthy food.
Absolutely. Yes, the vitamins that labeled on the front, it really makes it feel like you're drinking your vitamins. It really
exactly.
does. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is a nutritional facade. They put a nutritional halo around a junk food. They advertise it in such a way, they market it in such a way, they name it in such a way, so like vitamin water. They do this with a lot of products to trick people into thinking these foods are healthy. They are not. Processed foods are not healthy for anybody. And even they added a few pennies of synthetic vitamins, that does not make junk food healthy.
So that's very interesting. So they're synthetic vitamins. There's no natural derivative of vitamins in there. They're just basically watered down versions of vitamins. We have no idea if those types of vitamins even are assimilatable to the body, because they
that's
could,
correct.
Yeah.
And those vitamins are made, by the way, in a process that uses a genetically engineered bacteria as a substratum. This is not natural food.
Yeah.
And it's not what we should be eating. And we really need to get back to what our bodies crave and need, which is different from what they're selling us and trying to get us addicted to.
Okay, and that is whole live foods, right?
Yes.
Now, how do you suggest growing foods? You're a master grower. I know you have the beautiful gardens and you live off of your farm. How do we do this where do you start? Where would one start with growing a garden?
Well, there's several things. I just want to say first, I think we need a department of homegrown security.
I like it,
you know,
yes.
We have our food miles, our food is probably these long supply chains, and they're vulnerable to disruption at a lot of junctures. And in the future, as the price of oil continues to go and the world becomes increasingly destabilized, it's very, very important that people, for their sense of security and safety, have a local food supply. And the most local, of course, is homegrown. And second is things like local farmers markets and community-supported agriculture. Growing your own food is a terrific idea. You don't need as much land as you might think. You don't need synthetic fertilizers. You don't need synthetic pesticides. You just need some earth, some sun, some good seeds, and the willingness to do it. It's something that children love, by the way. It's a great thing for families to do together, growing some food. You start out with something simple like watermelon or squash or tomatoes, cherry. I've seen children pick little cherry tomatoes off of the vines, and they pop them in their mouth, and they love them. And at that moment, they realize what real food is.
Right.
At that moment, they're connected back to the earth and to themselves as part of the living earth community, instead of being consumers of junk food.
I bought some strawberries the other day from the market, and it was a natural market. And within a day or two, they were molded. And if you pick them off of the ground and they sit in, you know, in a bowl for even a week, they don't mold. I mean, it takes so long for those strawberries to get to the shelves. Even if they're organic and it's in a natural foods market, it takes a very long time. And even within 2 weeks, you will probably see those strawberries on your shelves at your market. And there, you have to eat them within a day. It's one of those things that bugs me, because not only is it a waste financially, but the food is already decaying by the time it hits the shelves, not to mention when you buy it.
And there's another part of that, too. You're right about the strawberries. They're highly perishable once they're ripe. So what industrial farming does is it picks it green. When the nutrients aren't fully developed, when the flavors aren't fully developed, and that way they can ship it, and it can withstand the time that's involved and the pressures of shipping. But the cost in terms of flavor, the cost in terms of nutritional value is tremendous. And so, again, if you can grow your own strawberries, you're really ahead of the game. I really think growing food is a wonderful thing. It has tremendous health benefits. Yeah, I think it has, if you allow me to say this, tremendous spiritual benefits. I think we feel more whole as human beings when we're connected to our food and our food sources, and they're healthy ones, and they're ones that we can feed our children and know we're doing good by them. That's a wonderful thing. That's an important thing. We really should have that right.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk about food towers and how to grow food wherever you are. And we're going to talk more about certain types of diseases like Alzheimer's and so forth that are related to certain types of foods. And we will be right back. This is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. My guest is John Robbins. We're talking about the man who contributed to making a huge global impact when his book came out, A Diet for a New America, in 1985. And his latest book is called No Happy Cows. In this book, he's talking about undercover investigations that he's done around feedlots and slaughterhouses, the rise of food contamination, and really a true food revolution, which we all need to get behind because I want to see us healthy as a nation. We're going to come back with John Robbins in just a moment. This is Lisa Gar. And by the way, we have a free gift for you from John Robbins on our website, which is theawareshow.com. That's theaware, AWARESHOW.com. You can check out some free information from John Robbins on that site. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Gar. My guest is John Robbins. Now, John, before the break, we were talking a little bit about growing your own food. Have you heard of these food towers where you can actually grow them? And if you're in an apartment or starting off to growing a bigger garden, you can seed these types of plants. And there's like a basket on the bottom. You could put tomatoes and then they grow up to the basket on the top. And maybe you put zucchini and something else. Have you heard of any food towers?
Yes. Yes, I have. It's taking advantage of basically vertical gardening.
That's right. That's right. Yes. Which
Lisa, I want to ask you something. Earlier, I think you said that you have a wheat allergy and you were just in Croatia and you could eat the bread there. Is that,
yes.
Did I get that?
Yes. My daughter and myself. Yes.
That's, you know, to me, that's evidence of something that I think is very important. I'm glad that you had that experience. And it shows that the bread in this country, like most of the other industrial food, it's something's done to it.
So yes,
it's partly the varieties that have been developed. Sometimes food is genetically engineered, and that's part of the problem. Sometimes chemicals are added. There are so many ways that our industrial food supply is contaminated. It is corrupted, and then we get these problems, these allergies and autoimmune diseases.
Yes.
We have skyrocketing rates of mental problems, both emotional instabilities and Alzheimer's and other kinds of cognitive impairments. And all of this is traceable to what's being done to the food that should be good for us to eat.
Yes, because the blood supply is going to the digestive system to try to figure out what just invaded it rather than to the brain, where it should be providing oxygen and healthy blood supply to the brain. So, yes, there's mental illness, there's Alzheimer's, there's memory loss, dementia. All of these things are happening in our country because of massive inflammation from the Frankenfoods that are being served here. And I know it's other countries, too, but I just happen to be on a bandwagon about this.
Well, I am, too. And, it occurs to me, here we have evidence, and that we have it if we just look around us in every way, that the food supply is making us stupid and it's making us ill. If you wanted to control people, if you wanted to disempower people,
yep.
If you wanted to make them unable to revolt, unable to think for themselves,
yep.
If you wanted to, wouldn't this be just how you'd do it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You would dumb down the society and start killing them off.
And that's why I think for people to take back their health, take charge of their food, and make food choices that are life-affirming and healthy and positive, this is a way to revolt against the enslaving and the oppressive forces in our society.
You are exactly, you couldn't have said it better myself. Yes, thank you. It is the way that when I looked at that train, I thought, what are they doing to us? Because that was what I thought, is How could we have gotten so disconnected from the source of food? And food is, you know, ancient medicine, and many different ways it was used as medicine, and it still is medicine because it's just back to basics. Don't eat anything with ingredients. Eat the, I mean, unless you make it yourself, eat the whole food, and its benefits are medicinal in many ways.
Yes, and you know, the Coke and we have a food system and politics that is made per calorie Twinkies cheaper than carrots. You know, we've made Doritos cheaper than healthy food. And that's why we see so much of it. It's very convenient. But to say no to the junk food and say yes to healthy food, that's an act of self-care. It's an act of love. It's really an act of love. And if you share good food with your family, I think you're loving them. I remember seeing a T-shirt on a child once that actually made a lot of sense to me. It said, if you love me, don't feed me junk food.
Nice. Well, why is that? Why is it less expensive to eat junk food and sand and candy and even cigarettes? Why is fresh food so expensive?
Because of our perverse subsidies. The Farm Bill is full of giveaways to corporate agriculture, and they make, there's all these incentives that lower the cost of production. A good case in point is we subsidize these massive fields of corn and soy that are used to feed livestock, and then the livestock feed is less expensive for the factory farms to buy. This brings down the cost of beef to people. We have cheap food that is killing us and is killing the world, and I think it's so important that we listen to our bodies and start to reclaim our health. That's one of the reasons I started the foodrevolution.org, Food Revolution Network, which is people can go to foodrevolution.org, foodrevolution.org. There's some free guides there, real food action guides that you can get that are free. We try to educate people and help people educate others, so that there can be waves of awakening, waves of empowerment, waves of people rising up against the dumbing down of our society.
Yes, and of our food supply crisis. Now, let's talk a little bit about what in your new book, No Happy Cows, about coffee and chocolate. I mean, some people say coffee is good for you. Some of them say it's too acidic in the body. Same with chocolate, and of course there's waxy chocolate, and then there's real cacao. What are your feelings about those two crops?
Well, let's talk about chocolate first, because it's one of my favorite foods, in moderation, and in a healthy form. If you add a lot of sugar, if you add a lot of fat, if you add a lot of milk to it, it is not so healthy. And that's unfortunately the way most people eat chocolate today. But a dark chocolate that's organically grown, a dark chocolate that's fair trade, it can be a real treat, and it's full of some very healthy things, polyphenols and bioflavonoids and antioxidants. It's actually one of the highest, most concentrated sources of these important nutrients. So there's nothing wrong with chocolate other than what we do to it when we match it up with a bunch of sugar and a bunch of fat. That it doesn't need to be healthy and doesn't need to be tasty and delicious. And one of the sorry things about chocolate production in the world is a very high percentage of the world's cocoa comes today from a certain part of West Africa, particularly the Ivory Coast. And children are used as slaves in the production of it. The only way to avoid that for sure, because nobody wants to eat slave-grown chocolate, nobody wants child slavery in their food. That's just terrible.
No, yeah.
The way you can ensure that you don't is if you get organic or if you get fair trade chocolate, because both of those are certified then not to be partake of that terrible phenomenon.
Now, explain fair trade. What does that mean exactly?
Fair trade is a certification that the farmers are getting a fair share of the revenue that's involved. You know, if you buy food sometimes from supermarkets, if you buy food from, for example, coffee or chocolate from somebody like Walmart, they are squeezing their suppliers in every way they can to get the price down. So they aren't paying a living wage to anybody. Mm. The the growers who are growing who run the coffee plantations or the cocoa plantations don't make enough money to pay their employees anything, so they end up using things like child slaves. As horrible as that is, even
oh my god, wow,
it's true. And when you get food that's fair trade certified, they have gone in and made sure that nothing like that is happening, and that the revenue is going not to middlemen like Walmart, but to the people growing the food in the first place. The people, then they have decent lives, and then the food that they produce is healthier, by the way, also.
And it's the same thing with coffee. I see a lot of fair trade coffee available as well.
Yes, and I always try to get fair trade coffee, and even if they don't have it, I ask for it so people hear it that I'm asking for it. It's not a panacea. It's not the answer to all of our problems, but it's a step in the right direction. And it's a step in a direction where we stop exploiting people in order to produce profits for corporations that are making billions off the back of everyone involved and selling us food that is damaging our health. We need to stop funding those corporate profits and getting fair trade certified foods, getting locally grown foods, growing your own foods, buying organic foods, eating lower on the food chain, eating less factory farm meat, eating less feedlot beef. These are the kind of steps that give you a healthier life.
I once interviewed you, and you interviewed a bunch of people who live past 100 years old. You wrote a whole book about it called Healthy at 100. And they were living disease-free well past 100 years old. What did you find as the most consistent thing about these people?
They loved life. Mm. They loved human beings. They interacted with people in a meaningful way. They didn't love things and use people like we so often do in our society. They used things and loved people. And they ate diets that were simple. They didn't overeat. None of them, not a single one of them, was overweight. This is a remarkable thing. They're called centenarians, people who live to the age of 100. And there are those who are healthy, those who live to that age in a healthy way are absolutely 100% of a good weight. None of them are heavy. It's a fact. 0% of them are overweight.
Interesting.
And of course, none of them are obese, obviously.
And that actually brings up a good point about consumption and the size of the meals that we eat here. It is definitely, imagine your plate filled to the brim. There's no white space left on the plate. Gigantic, bowls of things that we get, especially at restaurants. Now, five people can eat a salad at the size that they serve at restaurants these days. Do we need that much?
No, we eat too much in this country. We eat way many more calories than we need. And a lot of them are empty. One of the reasons that we're driven to eat more than we need, and we get fat in the process, and we get diabetes in the process, and we get Alzheimer's disease in the process, is this. So many of the calories are devoid of nutrition. They are what is called empty calories. They're empty of the nutritional elements we need to metabolize and function well. So if they're empty calories, we eat the calories and we get fat, but we're still hungry for nutrients. And we're programmed to go to food for our nutrients, rightly so. But when the food doesn't provide those nutrients, we keep eating in the hopes that somehow we'll get the nutrition we need. If, on the other hand, you eat only healthy foods and you don't eat processed foods and you don't eat junk foods and you don't let Coca-Cola or McDonald's or Monsanto dictate your life, and you take back charge of your own taste buds, then what happens is you are filled with nutrition with fewer calories, and you don't have to overeat at all. And you feel better. The thing is, people think they'll be deprived if they don't drink Coke or don't eat their Big Mac or something. But you'll be deprived. You'll be deprived of illness. You'll be deprived of being overweight. You'll be deprived of being desperate and sick and unhappy. That's what you'll be deprived of. I think that's a good thing.
You'll be deprived of relying on a healthcare system that doesn't work.
Exactly. And it will just give you more drugs with more side effects and drain your bank account in the process.
All right, let's talk about, though, lettuce and tomatoes and foods that are no longer green and white lettuces that I see. Why have white lettuce?
Yeah, white lettuce is iceberg lettuce, is the typical variety. It's a very high percentage of the lettuce that is consumed in the United States is this one variety, iceberg. It's the head lettuce. It's almost white. And, you know, it is the least nutritious lettuce that we know of in the world, and yet that's the one we're eating. There are dark green lettuces, like romaine, for example, that have many healthy nutrients in them. But we have come to like this vapid, insipid lettuce, iceberg lettuce. We drench it in salad dressings that are full of sugar and chemicals, and we think we're eating. We call ourselves connoisseurs. We think we're foodies, but in fact, we're just becoming sicker and sicker in the process.
Do you think? I mean, kale could never really get blanched like that, could it? It has enough nutrients in it that it will stay green.
That's right, and hooray for kale! Thank you for thank you for mentioning kale. Kale, collard greens, Swiss chard, spinach—these dark green leafy vegetables, mustard greens, parsley is a nutrient-filled green too. These are the foods. They're dark green leafy vegetables. These are the power foods. These are the most important foods to be eating if you want to have a fabulous life. If you don't, if you want to be fat and sick, then go ahead and eat the standard American diet and. You can have all the diseases you want.
If you really outweigh it, the price that we pay for processed foods is actually higher if you really compare it to your health and the healthcare costs that go up as a result of eating the processed foods. You might save a buck here, but I'm sure you have more statistics on that.
Well, the last time I looked, cancer was pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In many ways, it's costly on your life. It's costly on the people that love you, and it's costly on the healthcare system. Yes, but the whole point here of the food revolution is getting back to basics, getting back to real whole foods that have nutrient density. One of the things that I loved about the tomatoes in Croatia were they were so red and so thick. I mean, you could cut them with a knife, and they weren't super juicy because they were so dense with the meat of the tomato. And it's really, you can make sandwich bread out of the tomatoes because they're so thick. Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, we have gotten used to, we've normalized eating insipid vegetables and canned vegetables. And they don't have any taste. They don't have any nutrition. And people don't want to eat them. I've heard so many people say, well, I don't like vegetables. Well, because what they've eaten, what they've been exposed to, are industrial processed vegetables. If you ever taste a tomato like you just did in Croatia, like children sometimes do when they grow it in school or in their home garden,
right?
It is an ecstatic experience. It really is. It's what we're designed for. We have evolved over the centuries, over the eons, really. Metabolize and be nourished by real food.
I'll share just a quick story. We were going through this little tiny neighborhood, and there was a farmer's market that happened to have been going on that day. And I went up to one of the tables, and the farmer was sitting behind the table, and you could tell because his hands were cracked from hard work and thick and swollen and dirt under his nails. And he handed me this apricot. It was a nectarine. And when I held the nectarine, I could feel that the sun was still in the nectarine. It had never hit a refrigerator. It was never on a shelf. It went from the tree through this farmer's thick, beautiful hands to mine. And it was the most incredible nectarine I'd ever had. It was so juicy, but I could taste the sun. That's what food should be, and that's what we need to remember. So I'm right there with you, John, and I really appreciate you being with me just to talk about the food revolution and to remind people that that's what we're meant to do, is eat real, nutrient-rich, live foods and get over this malaise of the fast food generation where it's less expensive, but in the long run, it's a lot more costly on your health.
truly. And I think people need support in making these changes. The culture is filled with fast food companies and franchises. And that's one of the reasons we started the Food Revolution Network. People can visit it at foodrevolution.org. And I'm mentioning it again because I know that people can benefit tremendously from all the many, many, many free resources that are there. So please go to foodrevolution.org, foodrevolution.org, and you'll have a delicious experience.
Yes, absolutely, and a very educational one as well. There's many, many different interviews on there, hundreds of different interviews people could listen to and learn so much more, all different perspectives from the dairy industry to Alzheimer's to processed foods like we were talking about earlier, all sorts of great information, as well as you and your wonderful son, Ocean. So thank you so much for being with me today. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Lisa. Thank you.
All right. John Robbins is my guest, and his latest book is called No Happy Cows, his original book in 1985, A Diet for a New America, and he's had many in between. We will be right back. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM. This is Lisa Garr.